talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I usual.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning, it is January 18th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis is joining us today, ostensibly to talk about the Alliance for Women Film Journalist Award, but we really brought her in to review Norm of the North.
The movie everyone's talking about.
Oh, yeah. I think it knocked Star Wars off its perch. Is that right, Michelle? Michelle, tell us about the top 10 over the weekend.
Actually, this is the top domestic weekend box office estimates, according to our friends over at Rentrack. After ruling for four straight weekends, Star Wars is no longer number one at the box office.
What?
Exactly. Thank you, Jim. Universal Pictures Ride Along 2 is number one at the North American box office with $39.5
million.
Wow. Oh, come on. Come on. What? I'm going to be the only one in the room that likes that. At number two was Fox's The Revenant. It's also a big winner as it builds on critical and award season buzz. Last week, it received 12 nominations, including ones for Best Picture and for the performances of stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy. With nearly $150 million worldwide to date and climbing, it brought in $29.5 million this weekend and added nearly 200-plus theaters over the weekend. Star Wars The Force Awakens came in at number three with $25.1 million in receipts for the holiday weekend and an additional $72.4 million globally in its fifth weekend in cinemas, bringing its total to nearly $1.9 billion around the globe. This is the fifth film in history to join the billion-dollar club. J.J. Abrams' seventh installment now sets its sight on the $2 billion club.
Which it should hit probably after next weekend?
Yeah, probably.
Make its way to the trillion-dollar club.
At number four is Michael Bay's riveting 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. It came in at $16 million. Bay's best film to date will most likely see an estimated $19 million for the four-day weekend, and it had a budget of $50 million. At number five is Daddy's Home with $9.3 million. Paramount's film starring Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell is still doing extremely well with audiences. Its take globally, $179 million.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. Yeah.
At number, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm surprised it's still in number five slot in the top five.
Exactly.
That's hanging in there.
Yeah, so it beat Norm of the North?
It did, by one spot.
Okay.
At number six is Norm of the North from Lionsgate. It brought in $6.7 million for the weekend from 2,400-plus theaters. However, where is it sitting at Rotten Tomatoes?
Pretty low.
Zero.
Zero. Oh, yeah, I heard that they had they thought was a positive review from Toronto, but they reviewed it or looked at the review again, and I said, no, that's negative.
Right, exactly. Number seven is The Forest from Focus Features. That came in at $5.8 million. Paramount's The Big Short was number eight. It had the best hold in the top 10, falling just 16%. Took in $5.2 million for the weekend. Adam McKay's film has made $50 million total so far. Number nine is Sisters from Universal Pictures. That came in at $4.4 million. It's brought in $93 million worldwide to date. And number 10 is Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. Brought in $3.4 million. Domestic total now stands at $57.5 million. And number 11 was Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip from 20th Century Fox. Took in $2.9 million for the weekend. Globally, though, $125.6 million.
Oh, my goodness. So here comes number six down
there. I'm not reviewing it.
And lastly, number 12 was David O. Russell's Joy, and that brought in $2.7 million. The smaller independent movies like Brooklyn, The Danish Girl also received a bump from the award nominations last week.
I wonder if Room did also.
Yeah. And Room did as well.
Oh, good.
Room
good,
did as
good,
well.
Yeah.
All right.
Deserving, yes, yep. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get started on reviewing these movies because we got lots to talk about, a lot of award stuff. And we got four geeks crammed into this little room this morning, but that's okay.
Four geeks, no waiting.
That's right. It's cold out. Let's start with 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
Soon, or you're all gonna die.
You have
U.S. ambassador at risk.
The ambassador is in his safe haven. You're not the first responders. You're the last resort. You will wait.
You guys have seen that.
I have.
Kate has not. Yeah. Jim and I and Michelle have all seen.
Yeah.
The Secret Soldiers, 13 Hours Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Jim reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com and gave it 4 out of 5 stars. A very fair
Bravo.
Review.
Bravo.
It is a great movie. Jim, you want to talk about what you wrote in your review?
Well, I basically said that this was a new sort of level of maturity for Michael Bay. Usually, his Transformers films aren't exactly the brain food of movies. They're a little, dopey, mindless destruction. And there's a lot more thought that went into this. It's, of course, based on a true account of events that happened, almost 3.5-4 years ago in 2012. It's got a real sense of gritty realism to it. You can almost kind of feel the tension as soon as the plane that John Krasinski's character Jack Silva, I believe his name is, when it touches down in Libya. There's a lot of quick cuts to. These, all the eyes are on him in the airport, it seems like. So there's that sort of heightened paranoia that they keep going, in the pacing of the film for a long time. The action scenes are nicely done. A lot of quick cuts, as usual, but you're able to, for the most part, keep track of what's going on.
Yeah, that's one of the strengths is in Bay's direction is he sort of lays things out geographically well. A lot of these types of movies, you say, what the heck is going on? There's this compound that's a mile away from where the ambassador was, and you get a real good feel for the layout, the topography, where these terrorists are coming from, and that you got to give Bay credit for that. He does a really good job of directing this film. He kind of treads a fine line between his usual bombast and sort of the realism that this sort of docudrama requires. There's one amazing shot where you've got the cannon. The
mortar cannon?
Yeah, the camera is mounted inside the mortar cannon.
Yeah, yeah.
And the mortar shoots out. The cannon the camera follows the mortar on its tail up through the air and down into the roof of the compound. Now, Bay has cannibalized himself because he did that exact same shot in Pearl Harbor. Yeah. But it was effective then, and it is effective now. I really was impressed with the work that Bay did on this film.
Yeah. Lauren Baff also provided the score, another impactful score from him, which gives you that sense of immediacy. And we also, up on our site, is the interview I did with two members from the Real Annex team.
Yeah.
So, and they really liked it. They thought it was, they thought it was the real sense of the movie.
Yeah. Good. So they were...
They were really pleased.
Yeah. So they served as consultants, I guess, during the making of the film. They were there when they made it. Where was the film, do we know?
I believe in Malta. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of movies are shot in Malta.
Oh, Popeye, 1980. Yes, that was Sweet Haven.
Yeah.
And recently, By the Sea, I believe, was shot in Malta also. Mm-hmm. Doubling for France, I guess, in that.
It doubles for a lot of countries, apparently.
But John Krasinski is an action hero. He's very good in it. James Badge Dale, interesting name.
Wasn't Roy from The Office in it as well?
Yeah, he was. David Denman is
that
in
name?
It. Yeah,
okay.
as what is it? Not that is it? Is he playing Boone in it? Is that? Or I'm trying to think of the character name. But yeah, they all have little nicknames. All the soldiers, and it kind of gets into that the sort of buddies in a foxhole type of deal that has been part of a lot of war films over the years. I always expect one of the guys to be nicknamed Brooklyn or something like that.
And face timing with their wives and kids back home. That gets a little cornball, but
you have to give it that human element.
Yeah, they kind of abandoned that.
Another positive of the film is that it doesn't, it's just what happened there. It doesn't give, it doesn't go into this political stance. It's just basically their story, and that's what they wanted to get across because their story wasn't being told. That's why they originally wrote the book. So they try to just really keep it into that context of what was happening there for those 13 hours.
Well, I did hear this morning that, of course, the CIA is not happy with the film because the closest to a villain besides the armed militias is the sort of uptight, CIA guy that's running things and yelling at the soldiers.
Well, of course they're going to say that.
And he's kind of doughy, of course.
And they don't give him a last name. He's just Bob.
However, however, Bob. Though, I talked to a bunch of Marines over the weekend who did see the film, and they were were like, they were not surprised that the CIA came out and said, we're not happy with the film. However, the military is very pleased with the film overall, too.
Good. Well, I was pleased with the film.
Yeah.
So if one is not really a fan of Michael Bay, and I'm not, you might make an exception and go see this one.
Oh, definitely. Certainly it's the one of the best of his films. Maybe the best I've seen of him since maybe The Rock. You know, that's gosh, about 20 years old almost. But yeah, usually, you know, his stuff, I just, you know, it's just too in your face, it seems like. It's just, you know, really regressively dumb, a lot of it, you know.
What, no Armageddon? Come on.
What was the last one with the bodybuilders?
Oh, the pain and
Gain.
Yeah, that was him trying to sort of break out of his wheelhouse a little bit, less effectively, though. Yeah, all right, so we all really, really, really like 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. But do we all like Ride Along, too?
I do.
Michelle does. I reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I gave it 2 stars.
You generous man here.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought... I thought some of the jokes worked. You know, Kevin Hart certainly tries hard with his eye rolling and his mugging and his...
All the new dealers in Atlanta are getting supplied through Antonio Pope in Miami. You need to get me something on this guy.
2 days tops.
So get a team together and fix this.
Miami, James, I'm going.
Make sure you're back in time to make me Mrs. Blackhammer.
Hey, Ange, you know where my thongs are?
Check my top right drawer.
Wow. Oh, they were in my panty drawer, not yours.
But,
oh,
you know, but basically it's just kind of a lame action film. If you take Kevin Hart out of the thing, it's a really a pretty bad action film with, you know, these corny drug dealers and explosions and shootouts, and
it goes
on and
on.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the first one. And the first one's not much different, except this one they moved the location to Miami, which I kind of enjoyed because of all the bikinis. But, you know, then the big action climax is in one of these shipping container yards where so they can run around these big containers shooting at each other, and then of course one of the containers is full of explosive barrels, so we get these big giant explosions and these two guys running away from the explosion, and that goes on and on.
Yeah, wasn't that how they ended the A-Team movie, in a big container yard?
I've seen a lot of movies that I think Lethal Weapon 2 ended at a container yard.
You know there's Rush Hour 3 coming, though.
Ride Along 3. Probably after May. Making $34 million,
just
sure.
Like the flu.
I don't begrudge them. I don't, you know, it's show business.
Come on, it was fun. It's a throwaway.
Oh,
it's
I couldn't wait for it to end.
Well, I think Kevin Hart is a funny actor.
Doses.
I'd say maybe every third or fourth gag worked. I mean, the audience we saw it with, Jim, was just roaring.
Oh, I don't judge a movie by the audience, though. I mean, you know, they were all primed for it, and it's just he's an acquired taste I haven't acquired, I guess.
Okay.
You know, I thought he did some good work in what was the Get Hard, the Ferrell film.
Will Ferrell? No, yeah. I thought, yeah, that was pretty bad, though.
But it was a lousy film, but he had some, you know, moments when he was turned it down a few notches. Mm-hmm. You know, here he's bugging his eyes out and, you know, jumping around, and I was like, some decaf.
I'll be really interested to see what it does next weekend, if it's still how
it'll
far.
Plummet.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, but look what it's up against. There's not much.
The fifth wave? Is that it? That's no. Dirty Grandpa's not next week.
Yeah, I think it is.
They're not going to show it to us, I guess.
I don't think so. We haven't gotten anything.
That looks pretty funny.
We're running a contest for it.
A lot of bikinis in that trailer, too. Speaking of bikinis.
What is Robert De Niro doing in that? I mean, besides a paycheck.
Well, he's done a lot worse lately.
Yeah, we talked about him a couple weeks ago, how he's like become the new Nicolas Cage and just does not turn down scripts. But I don't know. It looks kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, it's got Aubrey Plaza in it, at least.
Yeah, and she's really cute in the trailer.
But, she's very very funny. But I miss her on Parks and Rec.
Yeah, but she really is sexualized in the trailer, I should say.
But, I hope it's good. I always hope that, you know, De Niro's going to be in a good film. He proved that he can still deliver and joy. He's very entertaining in that. But then again, he's working with David O. Russell again, so there you go.
All right, so Jim strongly dislikes Ride Along 2. Michelle really likes Ride Along 2, and I'm somewhere in the middle. And Kate did not see Ride Along 2.
No.
But Kate did see Norm of the North.
Humans are invading our land.
Read a movie, boys. Carabooyah.
I want one, I want one, I want one.
He'll finally discover.
Humans are moving here now. Look.
From Florida.
what he was born to do.
Go to the city, Norm, and convince them not to move him.
But I'll need soldiers on the ground.
Those little guys?
He wants you to stomp on him. He wants you to prove how tough he is.
You know, it, as I said in my review, in which I gave it one star, and that was generous.
Oh, yes.
I see these movies so you don't have to. Yeah. I threw myself on this bomb to warn you off. This is it's like a bait and switch for parents. You know, it looks like a cute little movie about a polar bear. You know, has this appeal of being, you know, theme for the season. Everybody, all those little girls are still thinking about the ice palaces and Frozen. But it is the weirdest, strangest movie ever. Yeah. The whole plot has nothing to do with, say, climate change or anything like that. It's about somebody wants to build a housing development in the Arctic. And these polar bears and caribou and lemmings and so forth, when the tourist ships show up, they put on a show like it's SeaWorld. Those are the only people they interact with. You know, and then they have these guys show up with a film crew to shoot a commercial, and there's all these jokes about filmmakers. It's just the strangest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And then in the process of this, of course, they're going to save their home from the housing development that's being built, which this is the one joke in it that's actually funny, in which they talk about they're going to make it the new Florida. So it's like a backdoor joke about climate change, but of course, Florida being first the tourists came and then they moved in. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the polar bear decides that he and his lemming buddies need to go to New York, you know, to save their Arctic home from this developer who wears a ponytail and spouts Buddhist philosophy but mistreats his employees. And I kind of wonder if there's a little Steve Jobs dig in that. But they go there, and there are no jokes about fish out of water, about, you know, the bear. Instead, we get jokes about a Shakespearean actor trying out for a role where he wears a polar bear costume.
That sounds really good.
No. But here's the thing. On top of all of this, okay, this is really crazy stuff, and maybe they could have made it funny. There are almost no jokes. I mean, the biggest jokes have to do with farts, peeing, pooping, and they're not even funny. It's like I sat there in the theater with an audience, and there was hardly a chuckle.
Really?
This thing was done in this almost deadly serious manner.
Was there a lot of like 2 and 3 year olds in the audience?
Yep, there were a lot of little kids there, and the kids didn't even laugh at
the kids
fart
jokes. Were they crying and
no, running up and down the aisle? They were mostly falling asleep because it was weird and
dull.
How long
is it? Is it 90 minutes? And who's the
his
voice
integrity
again?
Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider.
Okay.
Well, he's comedy gold at Rob Schneider.
now isn't the ponytail guy Mr. Green? That's Ken Jeong.
It is.
From Ride Along too. Right.
Yeah, he was actually pretty funny in Ride Along too.
Yeah, he's toned it down a little bit.
He's almost funny in this movie.
Okay,
but it's just the whole thing. It just really doesn't hang together. It's very.
Yeah, I remember a couple of or 3 years ago when I blasted this film. I think it was something like Happily Ever After. It was the movie about Red Riding Hood, and it was like part two of these films. And people were going, "Oh well, it's a kids' movie." I said, "No, that's no excuse. You know, we're not going to give you a pass because you know you made it for kids. You can make." You know, movies for kids and actually people of all ages and make it entertaining and, you know, to have it, you know, well plotted and well designed and all that. And it's no excuse.
Parents
anymore.
Need to step in and make entertainment choices for their children.
Yeah, and this is a case where the parents shouldn't take the bait on this one.
All right. So Kate strongly dislikes Norm of the North.
Like nearly everybody else.
So movies opening this weekend. Jim, you're seeing the fifth wave this week?
At 1:07 a.m., the Odyssey satellite received images of an object moving past Mars.
It's right over us.
I want to see.
I didn't know it then, but that was the last normal day of my life.
We have reason to believe there's an imminent threat to this location.
All right, stay with your sister.
The waves have begun.
It started.
Coordinated attacks on metropolitan areas.
Yeah, that's Wednesday night with Chloe Moritz Grace. I think that's still what she still calls herself, right?
Some kind of sci-fi teenager.
Yeah,
save the world.
Movie, yeah.
All right, I don't know much about it, but
I've seen the display up at Ronnie's for the last month or two. So you know, it looks like it's a lot of stuff blows up real good.
All right, good. I like those kind of movies. Also, Dirty Grandpa opens. They're not showing that to us. That has Robert De Niro and plays Zac Efron's grandpa, and they go on some road trip and get along with some bikini girls, and yeah, I don't know. Looks okay.
Yeah, I saw Julianne Hough, I think is her name, from Dancing with the Stars.
And she the Footloose remake?
Yeah.
I like her.
She plays Zach's fiance.
Oh,
yeah. I guess she's kind of overbearing, and it looks at least look like from the clip.
I think you say Huff is Huff, how you pronounce it.
Yes.
Name. And then also there's a horror movie opening Friday called The Boy. What's that actress's name?
Lauren Cohen.
Okay, yeah, from The Walking Dead stars in that. And it looks pretty creepy. It's got a little mannequin boy that apparently she shows up to be the nanny or something, and they tell her
she doesn't know it's a mannequin.
She knows it's a man. She knows it's a mannequin, but they tell her to treat it like it's a boy.
She doesn't know when she shows up.
She
shows up, and they're like, "Yeah, this is our son," and she's like, "What the?"
It's like, "Oh, I'm going to be going now."
But there was another movie called The Boy last year that showed up on some lists. So I was a little confused when I saw this movie, The Boy, on some top 10 list. So those will be some stuff to look forward to that perhaps we can review next Monday. But we have brought Kate Marquis in. She and Michelle want to talk about the Alliance for Women Film Journalists Award. Michelle, tell us about the Alliance for Women's Film Journalists, your organization.
We are made up of international and U.S. journalists and film critics. It's a group primarily about women and for women and women in film. And every year we attend many film festivals and we award awards to women filmmakers. We also hand out our yearly EDA awards. And this year we were about Spotlight and more Spotlight. So the Alliance of Women Film Journalists members, we honor the fine films that honor the profession of journalism with 4 EDA awards. Carol, Mad Max Fury Road, got the AFWJ Voters Love with 2 EDA awards each. The other 17 categories are claimed by a wide and surprising range of winners, including Critical Choices for Best Nudity and the Actress Most in Need of a New Agent.
Wait, let me interrupt here. The Women's Film Journalist gets to do an award for Best Nudity. Now, if we did the Men's Film Journalist and we gave an award for Best Nudity, we would be pigs.
But they're looking for the artistic.
Oh, I see. Artistic. Yes. All nudity is artistic, I think.
But we also have an award for Best Female Action Star.
There you go.
Oh, I like that.
Thank you.
Did it go to Charlize?
We're going to go down the list. Action,
I think she would be a shoe.
Yeah, they have some interesting categories. I have heard about them, so I'd be interested to see what.
All right, we'll go through your list. Yeah. I'm curious.
There are 2 kinds of awards. There are the best of awards, and then there are the ones that are limited to women filmmakers and stars and so forth. So do we want to start with the best of awards?
Yeah, let's go with that.
All right, so for Best Film, our nominees were Carol, Mad Max, Fury Road, The Martian, Room, and our winner was Spotlight. Okay, for Best Director, our nominees were Lenny Abramson for Room, Todd Haynes for Carol, Alejandro
Iñárritu,
sorry. For The Revenant, George Miller for Mad Max, Fury Road, Ridley Scott for The Martian, and Tom McCarthy for Spotlight was our winner. So for Best Screenplay, Original Screenplay, the winner was Spotlight. Again, our nominees were Ex Machina, Alex Garland, and Inside Out, which was Ronnie Del Carmo, Meg LaFarve, and Josh Cooley. Adapted Screenplay, our winner was Carol, Phyllis Nagy, woman.
Yay, good.
And our nominees were The Big Shorts, The Big Short, The Martian, and Room.
Best Documentary, our nominees were Amy, Best of Enemies, Going Clear, Scientology, and the Prison of Belief, The Hunting Ground, and What Happened, Miss Simone. And our winner for documentary was Amy. Our Best Animated Feature nominees were Anomalisa, Inside Out, Shaun the Sheep, and we chose, the group chose Inside Out as our winner. Okay. Best Actress nominees were Cate Blanchett for Carol, Brie Larson for Room, and Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years. And yay, we gave our award to Charlotte Rampling, which I'm hoping that also Oscar and we also hear her name.
I wouldn't count on it.
Very doubtful.
Never know. Best Actress in a Supporting Role. We went with Rooney Mara for Carol, Kristen Stewart for Clouds of Sils Maria, Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina, and Kate Winslet, Steve Jobs. Our winner was Kristen Stewart.
How come she didn't get an Oscar nom? I thought she had been the head buzz all
that
year long.
That was kind of that we were. I was wondering about a spoiler with her. I was wondering if she was going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'll do two more. Best actor: Matt Damon for The Martian, Leo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Michael Fassbender, Steve Jobs, Eddie Redmayne, The Danish Girl. Riding that wave, our winner was Leonardo DiCaprio this award season. So,
did you vote for Leo, Michelle?
You're opening a can of worms.
No,
there.
I went with Matt Damon.
Okay.
And best actor,
did you vote for Leo? Okay,
I did, but you know, I was on the fence between him and Matt Damon.
Yeah,
they were
sure. She's just saying that.
They were both excellent.
This one I'm pleasantly surprised about, even though best actor in a supporting role, we went with Sylvester Stallone for Creed, Michael Shannon, 99 Homes, another nominee, Mark Rylance, Bridge of Spies. Paul Dano was our ultimate winner for Love and Mercy.
Another Oscar snub, young
yeah.
Mr.
Yeah,
Dano.
I was kind of hoping we.
I
see.
Thought he'd be on there.
I did too. Even though I want to see Stallone win, I liked or you know I like Mike Rylance. I really like this category. I like the four that you know were chosen.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
So. And then I'll let you pick up Best
okay,
Ensemble.
Okay, so we have Best Ensemble Cast, and I'm glad we give an award for that because mm-hmm. I think that's a good category. Our nominees in that category were The Big Short, Spotlight, and Straight Outta Compton.
What about Love the Coopers?
Well, nope, sorry. That didn't make the cut.
This is the last time we talk about Love the Coopers.
And we actually had a tie in this category, both Spotlight and Straight Outta Compton.
Oh, that's a nice
one
tie.
For that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good-looking tie.
And Best Editing, our nominees were The Big Short, Mad Max, Fury Road, and Spotlight, and the winner was Mad Max. And Best Cinematography, our nominees were Carol, Mad Max, Fury Road, and The Revenant, and our winner in that category was Carol.
Beautiful film.
Yeah, well... So was The Revenant.
Yeah.
So was Mad Max.
But because the you know, presumed winner at the Oscars is going to be Lubezki, you know, Oscar win.
So Ensemble was a tie?
It could be. Yeah, Ensemble was a tie. That was one of several ties.
And if I can go back just a minute, best editing was a woman, and it's looking like she might win the Oscar as well for Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah, you should have had that editor. Ensemble cast. You should have had them like fight it out for the winner. Straight Outta Compton guys versus these.
So it's just you and Screen Actors Guild to do it ensemble,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
nice.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great category. Right. For best film music or score, that's one category for us, we nominated Carol, The Hateful Eight, and Mad Max Fury Road, and we gave the award to Hateful Eight.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's see. And, I'm sorry. I missed one of the nominees in music, and that was Youth, David Lang's score. Best non-English language film, our nominees were Mustang, Phoenix, and Son of Saul, and the award went to Son of Saul. So we want to talk about the Women Focus Awards?
Yeah, we also, so in addition to those, we also hand out, these awards go to women only. So our Edo Awards for Best Woman Director went to Marielle Heller for Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
Best Woman Screenwriter went to Emma Donahue for Room. Best Female Action Star went to Charlize Theron, Mad Max Fury Road.
Was that over Daisy Ridley and who else was there?
Yeah, Daisy Ridley for Star Wars was nominated, along with Jennifer Lawrence for Hunger Games Mockingjay 2 and Emily Blunt for Sicario.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay, that's a good choice. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
We also had Best Breakthrough Performance. The nominees for that were Brie Larson, Room, Belle Poley for Diary of a Teenage Girl, Daisy Ridley for Star Wars The Force Awakens, but our ultimate winner was Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina, Testament of Youth, and The Danish Girl.
Oh, my
what
goodness,
a year
a
for her. Yeah.
And you left out Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I knew you were going to say
that. And The Seventh Son.
Oh, yeah.
We also give an award for our Female Icon of the Year. This is presented to a woman whose work in film or in life made a real difference. That went to Chantel Ackerman, just in memoriam for being a great filmmaker and an inspiration to women
what
filmmakers.
What does she do?
She is, I believe, is a producer, also marketing. And we also give, now here's our special mentions. These are the EDA Special Mention Awards. We give out an award for Best Depiction of Nudity, Sexuality, and Seduction.
Right.
This was a tie. Well, our nominees were Anomalisa, Carol, and Diary of a Teenage Girl. We gave two awards for Anomalisa and Carol.
Okay, and another category is the actress defying age and ageism. Once again, a really interesting category. Mm-hmm. And our nominees in that category were Helen Mirren, Charlotte Rampling and Lily Tomlin, and we had a tie between Charlotte Rampling and Lily Tomlin.
Oh, nice.
Okay, and another category, and this is something you won't see on many lists, is most egregious age difference between the leading man and love interest.
Oh,
okay. Mm-hmm. Our nominees in that were Danny Collins, which was Al Pacino and Katrina Cass, Freeheld, Julianna Moore and Ellen Page, Irrational Man, Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone, and Spectra, Daniel Craig and Leah Sado. And our pick for that was Danny Collins, Al Pacino, and Katrina Cass. Al Pacino, I think, born in 1940, and Katrina Cass in, I think, 76.
I think Irrational Man, that was sort of the point of the film, was that these professors who seduced their students.
Right. It was indeed.
But actually, that was a theme.
I wouldn't call that egregious.
But that was actually a theme in Danny Collins, too.
There was
more of a romance going on between Danny Collins' character, Al Pacino's character, and Annette Bening's character in that one.
But back to the nudity thing. I thought Alicia Vikander did a great nude scene in Ex Machina at the end, where she sort of peels off her skin. But
yeah, that's a different. Yeah, but it's not just about nudity. It's about
sexuality.
Sexuality and seduction.
That's why Carol would be in there.
So, and then our next category, we have actress most in need of a new agent.
Yeah,
and this is always a fun one. And once again, a category you won't see on many lists. So our nominees were Bryce Dallas Howard for Jurassic World, Dakota Johnson for 50 Shades of Grey.
More good nudity.
Emma Stone for Aloha, and we gave the award to
Aloha.
Emma Stone for Aloha.
She should have known better.
She should have known better. Well, everyone should have known better when they saw that script. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, Cameron will make it wonderful.
And here's another category that maybe other lists should consider. Movie you most wanted to love but just couldn't.
Okay.
So our nominees were Aloha, The Danish Girl, Hateful Eight, and Sisters. And we gave the award to Danish Girl.
Yeah,
I can see that.
Kind of a snooze.
So those are the Alliance of Women Film Journalists EDA Awards for 2015.
Well, good. Well, Jim and I are going to start the Alliance for Men's Film Journalists group and just lock all you women out and do the same thing next year.
I think there's an award show. There, it's on...
the Spike or something?
Yes, that's it. It's on Spike. I watch it every year, but it's the Men's Award.
Yeah.
You've been scooped.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so the Oscar noms came out the other day.
They did.
Thursday morning.
Yeah. Did you guys get up bright and early and check those out? I was in a doctor's waiting room. And
Melissa Thompson from We Are Movie Geeks was granted credentials. Our site was granted credentials. So we were there at the Samuel Goldwyn Theater in Beverly Hills at AMPA's headquarters to cover the nominations. We were one of 400 journalists, international and domestic, who were in the theaters as the nominations
So Melissa Thompson was in that room with...
Yeah,
with,
she was. Yeah, so we were granted credentials.
Who were the presenters?
Guillermo del Toro and John Krasinski.
Ang Lee.
And Ang Lee. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, and they announced the nominations in two different segments. It's always, built around the morning talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it on Good Morning America. I was watching that.
So last week we talked about We Are Movie Geeks Oscar nominations predictions, and I've still got that list. You kind of came up with most of these yourself, Michelle, but you did a pretty good job with Best Picture. You Straight Outta Compton did not make the cut, but Room did. And is that the only one where you were off? I think it is.
I didn't
the
bring
Best Pictures.
Yeah, I've got the list right.
Oh,
here.
Good. Okay.
Well, in that category, I was kind of hoping they'd go to 10 so they could include Compton and maybe Star Wars.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
I agree.
Right.
Carol was omitted.
Yes, as was Creed.
Mm-hmm. Carol seemed to have lost a lot of its momentum, I guess.
I'm just going to briefly go down the nominations. Who got the most? The Revenant did receive the most with 12, and usually the one picture that gets the most nominations usually does go on to win Best Picture. Historically, Mad Max Fury Road 10 nominations, which great for that film. The Martian received 7. All receiving 6 nominations were Bridge of Spies, Carol, and Spotlight. 5 apiece were The Big Short and Star Wars The Force Awakens. and Star Wars, we pretty much figured in the technical categories. Sure. Below the line. Danish Girl and Room received 4 each. And at 3 apiece were Brooklyn, The Hateful Eight, Sicario, and at 2 each were Ex Machina, Inside Out, and Steve Jobs. So that's how that, they provide like a lot of historical sidebars and...
Sure. Yeah. But let's go down these individually. You had Johnny Depp in Best Actor, which Jim and I both...
We
set you straight there. And they ended up putting Eddie Redmayne, which you did not have on your list in that spot. Besides that, you were 4 for 5.
Okay.
Performance in a supporting role, you had Idris Elba.
What a crime.
And who did they put in that slot that...
Oh, gosh.
They put in Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy
was a big surprise. The room, you could hear the room just...
Well, you know, Tom Hardy was so good in... Yes. What was that other film that I liked
Legend?
So much? Legend. And I mean, he was amazing. I thought that was the performance of the year. But the movie didn't get a whole lot of love, so maybe they thought, well, he's had such a great year with Mad Max and Legend. Let's give him a nom.
I think this category is pretty much they can start engraving Stallone's name on the, you know.
I'd vote for him if I was a voter.
The room erupted. Melissa said the room just, and you could hear it over the TV when they were announcing, the room just like went crazy when they said Stallone.
Well, you think they can put Leo's name on the award already, too?
Probably.
Okay, supporting actress. You had Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina, but actually she got the nom for Danish Girl, which is a little strange because it was an awfully big role, but she's new. Jennifer Jason Leigh got it.
Yay.
Rachel McAdams got it. Kate Winslet got it. Yeah. Rooney Mara got it. And so you were 5 for 5, except you had the wrong movie for Miss Vikander.
Yeah, that category is kind of up in the air, I think. I think they could go with Alicia or with Kate, you know, either one.
And then up...
Or even Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah, I think Jennifer Jason Leigh has a really strong chance.
I love that she's in there.
I'm glad she's in there. I don't
think they'll give it to Kate Winslet.
No.
And they're not going to give it to Rachel McAdams. I think Jennifer Jason Leigh actually is the front runner, or maybe Rooney Mara.
Did we talk about the best actress already?
We have not. That was, let's see, Brie Larson, Kate Blanchett, Charlie Rampling, Saoirse Ronan, and who was the fifth?
Brie Larson, Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence. You didn't think Jennifer Lawrence would be nominated. I thought she would be, and she was. You had Alicia Vikander and Danish Girl, but they bumped her down to supporting. Well, I guess Brie Larson should be thankful that Kate Blanchett just won 2 years ago and Jennifer Lawrence just won 3 years ago.
I think Brie Larson has this one.
She probably does, just for the reason I just said.
But God help me if they say Jennifer Lawrence's name. I mean...
Jennifer Lawrence
is great in that.
Well, she's great, but it's kind of a...
She's fine, but enough already. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I think she's a terrific actress, but...
I do too, you know, but I not think again.
That, I think that Brie is well, more she's her role is more
so
powerful
much,
than
yeah,
Jennifer Lawrence's
you.
Character in Joy.
Thank
although
you.
I enjoyed Joy, so you know.
Well, I have to speak up in favor of Charlotte Rampling, which of course
too.
It would be a surprise.
Thank you.
Excuse me, and Saoirse Ronan, who in her first grown-up sort of role, what a talented actress! I mean, it was a good year for women's in leading roles.
Best animated feature had a couple of movies that. I think kind of took everybody surprised.
Yeah.
Minions wasn't on there, nor was Peanuts movie.
Or The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah,
or The Good Dinosaur. And they had...
They had when Marnie Was Here, is that the name of it? Which is, I guess, is the official last film from the studio Ghibli.
Yeah,
in Japan. So.
And they had some other film I was completely
Boy
unfamiliar
in,
with.
Boy in the World.
Boy in the World.
Right. Okay.
Yep. That's that category where they always throw on these films that... Most Americans haven't seen or heard of.
Yeah.
All right. Best cinematography, Mad Max, Bridge of Spies, Carol, Revenant, Sicario were your guesses. Were you 5 for 5 on that one?
Carol, The Hateful Eight, Mad Max, Fury Road, The Revenant, Sicario.
Oh, okay. So Bridge of Spies did not get a cinematography and Hateful Eight did.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Let's see. Costume design, who cares? Best director.
Sandy Powell got two nominations.
The costume people to care.
Yeah, okay,
she got two nominations. She now has the most nominations for costume design of any living person with 12.
Really?
The overall record in the category, of course, belongs to Edith.
Right. Is Cinderella get a nom?
Cinderella did.
Oh, okay.
Carol, Cinderella, Danish Girl, Mad Max, Fury Road, and The Revenant.
So you had Brooklyn.
Did.
And you had alternate suffragette. I think suffragette got shut out, did it not?
Yeah, I don't think it did.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, now let's move on to Best Director. Big Short, Adam McKay, Mad Max Fury Road, George Miller. Carol Todd Haynes you had, but that didn't happen. Spotlight, I can't think of his name.
Todd McCarthy.
Martian, Ridley Scott, and Revenant. Martian, Ridley Scott. He got snubbed as well.
Yeah, Lenny Abramson got in for Revenant.
So who? Oh, really?
Yeah, that's. I'm telling you, that's why Ridley Scott has a PGA credit every time now. Because.
Yeah, but it didn't help. That was kind of a snub.
But if the Martian should win, he'll get to go up to the podium.
Oh, okay.
If it wins Best Picture.
If it wins Best Picture. Yeah.
Which nobody expected to.
No, it's a long shot.
It's interesting. I think they'll give it to Mad Max.
I think so, too. I think
they're not going to give it to Spotlight. That movie wasn't
I think this year,
cinematic.
Best Director and Best Picture are going to split.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Inarritu hadn't won last year, he would probably win Best Director and Best Picture.
They say him in The Revenant.
But I think since he won last year, have they ever given it to the director 2 years in a row?
Well, that's an interesting, yeah.
But not in recent history.
Yeah.
So I think they'll give it to George Miller. I don't know. That's my guess. He certainly deserves it. Best Documentary Feature, He Named Me Malala got a snub.
Yes.
Amy seems to be the front runner, and a bunch of those movies. I
think Amy's likely to take that.
I do too, more than likely. Yeah. What do you think its strongest competition is? You think it's the Hunting Ground or the Scientology dog?
The Look of Silence.
Did Hunting Ground get nominated?
No.
Sorry. I didn't think so.
Amy, Cartel Land, The Look of Silence, What Happened, Miss Simone, and Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom.
Yeah, the last one is the only one I've not seen. Yeah. I have a screener of it, though. I should take a look at it, though. Yeah.
I would think Cartel Land.
Yeah, Cartel Land is really strong too. Yeah.
So. All right. Best Editing: Big Short, Mad Max, Spotlight, Martian, Revenant. Is that the way the Oscars?
The Big Short, Mad Max, The Revenant, Spotlight. Strong for that film, and Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
All right. Okay. Mad Max will win Best Editing in a blowout. Let's see. Best Foreign Language Film: Son of Saul, Labyrinth of Lies, Winter. Mustang, A War, Viva.
Although I like that theme. Yeah,
that's
like
what you had. I'm looking at the wrong list.
There are some good nominees besides Son of Saul, which is maybe the likely winner. Embrace of the Serpent, which played the film festival.
Yeah, which
really
I got
good.
To judge. That was my pick for the for our award for best best of the fest. But I was overrode, I guess, on that one.
And Mustang, which is, a really good Turkish
I didn't
film
see that.
About oh yeah. I know you should see this.
It was at the Tivoli.
Thebe played over at Webster, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, after the film festival it did. Yeah.
All right. What got nominated for makeup and hairstyling?
Mad Max Fury Road, the hundred year old man who climbed out the window and disappeared.
A crazy funny comedy.
And The Revenant. And I was hoping Mr. Holmes was going to get in here.
Yeah, you had Mad Max in your predictions. Black Mass, I should say.
Yeah, that was another one. It didn't. Achievement in Music written for Motion Pictures. Bridge of Spies, Thomas Newman, yay. Carol, Carter Burwell, a great score. The Hateful Eight, Ennio Morricone, that's kind of looking like our winner. Sicario, Johan Johansson, another great score from him. And Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
You were 5 for 5 on that prediction then.
Oh, good.
Good job.
Yeah.
Achievement of Music written for the motion pictures. This is Best Original Song. Earned It from 50 Shades of Grey. Manta Ray from Racing Extinction. Simple
Never
Song 3 from Youth. Till It Happens to You from The Hunting Ground. That's Diane Warren and Lady Gaga's song.
There you go.
Writing's on the Wall from Spectre. So another James Bond film.
Yeah, they'll probably give it to Writing's on the Wall just because, it's James Bond.
I think that's pretty much got it sewn up. But is the Manta Ray, is that from a documentary or something?
I believe so.
I hadn't heard of that before, so.
All right, what got nominated for Best Special Effects?
The next one on the list is Production Design. That's Bridge of Spies, Danish Girl, Mad Max, The Martian, The Revenant. Our next one is Best Animated Short.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going with
you didn't predict these, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, okay. Best Live Action Short, Ave Maria, Day One, Everything Will Be Okay, Shook and Stutter. Achievement in Sound Editing, these are Below the Line, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Sicario, and Star Wars The Force Awakens. Pretty much sound mixing, Bridge of Spies, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Star Wars Force Awakens. Kate, I'll let you take over visual effects.
Visual effects. Okay. So the Academy nominated Ex Machina, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And what were you predicting?
The Walk was on your list. And Jurassic World was on your list.
Yeah, wow.
The Walk. I'm surprised they missed that. That really was astounding.
And that was
visually.
Part of in the bake-off that they do every time. That was one of the 10 that they looked at.
Did Jurassic World get any noms? I guess not.
Yeah, I don't think
so.
No,
not even sound.
Not even sound.
Wow.
It won at the box office.
That's true.
All right.
Until Star Wars.
Now we come
out.
To screenplay. The screenplay is really interesting.
Yes. You're going to start with adapted?
So, adapted screenplay. The Academy nominated The Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, The Martian, and Room. What were you predicting?
You were five for five on that one. No, you had Trumbo.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, no, you have Steve Jobs also. You weren't five for five. You were only three for five.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because they really like Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was surprised. But I like this category. I mean, two women are nominated. Mm-hmm. Drew Goddard, he got a nomination for The Martian. So I really like this category.
Okay. Well, I think The Martian probably has a pretty good chance of winning.
But The Big Short, the way it's I don't know. I would love to see either Carol or Room win, just, you know, for those women to come up to the podium that night.
You know, I'd like to see women win the award, but I also thought Brooklyn and The Martian were great adaptations.
Weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, original.
So the Academy nominated Bridge of Spies, Ex Machina, Inside Out, Spotlight, and Straight Outta Compton.
So Quentin Tarantino got a big snub in that category.
Yeah.
But for Straight Outta Compton. It's one nomination.
Yeah, really.
Yay. Good job, Academy.
That's the only nomination it got?
Yeah, good job, Academy.
Well, I thought Hateful Eight was the best screenplay of the year.
Amazing.
It's good.
I could see it going to Spotlight or Inside Out. I would love to see either of
those. Yeah, I think Spotlight probably is going to win that. I think that's going to be its biggest win. So, is that it?
That's it.
All right. How about, like, honorary awards? Have they announced who's giving Lifetime Achievement Awards this year?
They already announced those, and they were awarded in November. So those used to be part of the Oscar show, which no longer are. They show clips from the evening, and those were handed out to Jenna Rollins and Spike Lee.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so the Oscars. When's the Oscars? February 28th.
28th, yeah.
28th or something
like
that.
And I will be in the press room once again.
I'll probably be at the Tivoli hosting their showing of the Oscars with Oscar trivia and prizes.
Oh, it'll be a fun night.
It's always a fun night, Oscar night. What else can we talk about? Oh, we lost a couple of people last week, a couple of movie people. Let's start with David Bowie, who died of age 69 of cancer. He made some interesting movie choices, David Bowie. He didn't really make any bad movies. I was looking at a list of the movies he was in. I mean, I guess he didn't need to. He probably didn't need the work. He was more successful as a musician, of course, than as an actor. But if you look at his body of work in movies, really interesting choices, one after another. Starting with, I guess, The Man Who Fell to Earth, Nicholas Roeg's bizarre 3-hour film about a Martian. What else was he in? The Hunger?
The cool elegance of David Bowie. The open sensuality of Susan Sarandon. Combined to create a modern classic of perverse fear.
Hunger's a little cheesy, but it's still a pretty visually interesting movie that Tony Scott, I believe, directed.
Yeah. One of my personal favorites, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Yeah.
Go back if you can watch. Go back and watch that.
Yeah.
And Basquiat, where he played Andy Warhol. That was fun. Yeah, and a great cameo in the first Zoolander.
Of course, himself.
And really, really great Nikola Tesla.
That's right.
The Prestige.
Yeah, that was that. I like that casting. Good for Chris Nolan to put him in that.
And Pontius Pilate, Scorsese had him as Pontius Pilate in his Last
Jim
Temptation
Henson
of
movie.
Christ.
Oh, Labyrinth. The Goblin.
Oh.
A world where anything seems possible and nothing is what it seems.
Everything I've done for you. I move the stars for no one.
Yeah, we're actually showing that at Tenacious Eats Movies for Foodies in March.
Had you already scheduled it?
No, this was Chef Liz wanted to show it a couple of years ago, and nobody bought any tickets. You know, she only sold like a half a dozen tickets, so she ended up canceling because of low ticket sales, but she thinks with Bowie being in the news and dying.
Labyrinth is a good one because young girls, teenagers at the time, like, there's a few scenes that...
And then
the girls were gushing over David Bowie in that role.
And Jennifer Connelly is in that, too, speaking of teenage girls.
Oh, yeah.
What else was Bowie in?
There was a nice piece by Christopher Nolan in Entertainment Weekly about working with Bowie. Should check that out.
Yeah, very nice. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. What was Just a Gigolo?
Oh yeah.
Who was it? Was Marlene Dietrich his co-star?
I think so. Yeah.
And David's Bowie's son. We talked about this last week. Is filmmaker Duncan Jones who did Moon
and Warcraft coming up as Duncan Jones.
Yes, it is. It is, and he put on a nice picture on Twitter of he and his dad when he was little. So it was and we had posted that on our
I saw a trailer for Warcraft. Did you see that trailer?
Yeah, we've had that.
The special effects look really cheesy.
And do we mention that his album is now number one?
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Amazing. Yeah,
that's not surprising.
And his film work was really interesting, and he didn't give a performance that I didn't like, but his work in across music and culture and even fashion, it's a shame that people are talking about him now that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have that top-selling film.
Yeah. So R.I.P.
Top-selling album.
So R.I.P. to David Bowie. Also R.I.P. to Alan Rickman. Died of cancer at age 69.
That's heartbreaking.
This week. That came as a surprise. Did you guys know he had cancer?
No, I had no idea.
Did he keep it kind of private?
Yeah, even more than Bowie did, I guess.
His breakout role was as Hans Gruber in The Great Die Hard.
You have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequined shirts.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yes. Yeah, they name-checked that in that Seth Rogen flick. That's very funny.
One of the great villains.
Yeah, he says, that was it. The woman says, he's my Christmas icon.
Yeah.
Hans Gruber.
A lot of people know him from his villain roles, but he was also absolutely wonderful in Madly, Truly,
Truly,
Deeply.
Madly, Deeply, yeah.
Wasn't
he a ghost? It was a love story about a ghost.
Yeah.
Right.
But it was better than Ghost.
Much better than Ghost. And
it's like Ghost without Whoopi.
Ghost with more real comedy.
He was part of the ensemble of Love Actually also.
Everybody loves that movie. Yeah,
and he was also in Dogma.
Oh yeah.
He was another great villain role was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, he stole. They had to edit that movie because when focus groups, they loved him and not Kevin Costner.
Did he steal that movie? He really did.
Yeah, and cancel Christmas.
Cancel the kitchen scraps for lepers and orphans. No more merciful beheadings. And call off Christmas.
That's a funny line he had in that movie.
Oh yeah, and I guess he's most endeared as was it Professor Snape? In the Harry Potter films. I guess he's got a huge following from those films.
Yeah, he also was in Sense and Sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
But he was never nominated though, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Underappreciated actor.
Huh. Mm-hmm. All right. So R.I.P. to David Bowie and to Alan Rickman. And RIP to the show, because we have got to wrap it up. We'll be back next week, though. Doggone it. We'll be back next week to review The Fifth Wave and Dirty Grandpa, if we see it, and The Boy, which I'm sure I'll see The Boy.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about all kinds of other stuff, because we always do here at the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And Kate Marquis.
Thanks for joining us this morning, Kate.
Thank you.
And everybody listen in again next week.
Black leather, black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather, black leather.
Oh, naughty, Stike.
Hello, Don. Black leather, black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather, black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock.